WBUR Boston and WRNI Providence, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point.
This is a CNC Breaking News Special Edition, America's New War. Live from the Cable News Channel studios in Atlanta, here's whatever anchor team we have available at the moment.
Good evening. We have breaking news. America has a new war. Chet?
That's right, Andrea. America's new war. This is a brand spanking new war.
Not the old war, but a shiny, gleaming new war.
America's new war. Tricia will give us all the latest.
Thanks, Don. Right now, details are sketchy. America's new war is being fought somewhere against an unknown enemy. The Pentagon has named the war Operation Bendover and Take Your Eagle the Hard Way. When we know more, we'll be sure to pass it along.
A brand spanking new war, and a war that it turns out will be over by the end of a 90-minute play, A New War, written by playwright Gip Hoppe. A New War is a new satirical look at war and the news media. It premiered at the Wellfleet Harbor Actors Theater in Wellfleet, Massachusetts, and pokes fun at everything from TV news, war and patriotism, to America's rip-snorting national ego. This hour, we're bringing the stage to the studio and satire up to the minute. Joining me tonight is A New War playwright Gip Hoppe, along with cast members Caitlin Gibbon, Nathaniel McIntyre, Michael Dorval, and Stephen Russell, who will be sharing scenes from the play throughout the hour. Welcome to all. Welcome to On Point.
Thank you. You've
already got me cringing. I heard you rehearsing in advance, and as somebody who's talked an awful lot about the war in this last year, I'm holding my head in my hands. I hope that the way we cover the war is not the way you play the war, but my gosh, it's funny. It's just fantastic. Gip, you've written a lot of plays that have gotten lots of attention. Jackie in American Life, about our obsession with celebrity. Heart of Jade, about trashy novels. Ruby Tuesday, about corporate America. And now, A New War. I mean, it's silly to ask why now. It's in all of our faces, and we're all kind of simultaneously transfixed and grossed out by the coverage. But how much of this coverage did it take before you sat down with pen in hand and said, I've got to write this up?
Well, I mean, it all pretty much started during the Afghanistan invasion, when I saw one morning, I woke up and turned on CNN, and they had titled the war, The Invasion, America's New War. And that sort of struck a chord in me. I always associate the word new as something positive, something, you know, new and improved.
New and improved.
And the title, A New War, sort of hit me, you know, between the eyes. I thought, well, there's the incongruity of it sort of hit me. And I just sort of thought about that. And I've always watched a lot of cable news and always had a lot of fun. I've always found high comedy in their attempts to fill all that time.
Give us the montage, the image montage, the soundbite montage, the kind of things that were washing over you that you said, oh, my gosh, I've got to do something with that.
Oh, well, I mean, it's just there's so many I can't even begin. Well, for one, you know, I think there's the side of nicely coiffed anchor woman on the deck of an aircraft carrier oohing and aahing about jets taking off. You know, these are just the images you get. Supposedly crossfire shows of supposedly there's a liberal and a conservative, but it ends up being two highly conservative people.
Meat eating.
Yeah. And, you know, just the images like that. I think the one that really struck me the most, though, was during a Baghdad action during the Clinton administration when they showed a black sky over Baghdad for hours and hours and hours. And I do remember one of the anchor women on CNN claiming that she saw a flash of light. And there was big news that there was light, and it turned out to be a delivery truck driving through downtown Baghdad.
Like watching for fireflies in January.
So I just, you know, all these things added up, and I finally just woke up one morning and just wrote this real quick.
Oh, my gosh. It's funny. We want to hear more and more of it, and we've got the whole cast here, and we're so happy to have that tonight. We're going to have the cast giving our listeners a good bite of A New War tonight, because we know you'll recognize it, and we hope you'll go see the play if you're in the Boston area. But you're going to get a lot of it right here. Let's dive into some. It's great to have you guys all around the microphone. I don't know, you bring on a general early, as we're always bringing generals on, as certainly cable television is always bringing generals on. When generals are on, the audience stands at attention.
Yes.
Let's just dive in. Gip, introduce it, and let's hear some.
Yeah, well, this is just, you know, there's a military expert. They always have on CNN or cable news, they always have a military man come on and
but of course,
describe the weaponry and the actual physical reality of the war. And this is a scene where we bring our general on.
All right.
Joining us now is retired General Buck Heston. He'll be familiar to viewers as our expert in military operations. General, welcome.
Thank you, Rachel.
General, can you tell the viewers what the strategic thinking might be right now inside the Pentagon?
Erica, most likely they are considering a three-prong attack.
Can you explain the word prong to our viewers?
Prong. I'll try to explain that word in civilian terms. Prong. First, one should say it without an Asian twang.
Prong!
Right. Now, the way you just said it sounded suspiciously Asian. No, the American way to say it is prong. Three-prong attack. The word prong should not sound like something on a menu in a Thai restaurant.
Prong. Three-prong attack.
Now, if the folks at home can go to their kitchen silverware drawer and remove a fork, I can demonstrate the prong theory.
We have a fork here.
Good, if I may.
Certainly.
Now, if you hold the fork up so that the light can be seen behind it, you'll see these little things sticking up from the handle. This is where the food you eat with the fork would be contained. Normally. Of course, we're in a war situation here.
In peacetime, the fork is not a metaphor.
Correct. In peacetime, the word prong wouldn't have any secondary meaning, and the civilian population could just use the fork and not think too deeply about it. But now...
Now we are at war.
A new war.
A brand new war.
This isn't the old war, Jessica.
And it's important for us all to remember that.
The three-prong attack will most likely start with the unleashing of a satellite-guided ARCO-3 searcher missile attack. This bomb is also known as the scrotum scraper.
That's some great military talk. Could you keep going with this kind of thing?
The ARCO-3 searcher, or the scrotum scraper, as we like to call it, is fired from space and guided by satellite. It has the ability to seek out the homes of subversive or hostile entities. It then knocks on the door of the enemy and, in the native language of the enemy, announces a delivery of the local cuisine, usually something slimy and inedible to us. The bad guy opens the door, expecting a surprise of barbecued dog or cat, and before he can say Allah, the scrotum scraper disembowels him. It then cremates the remains and vacuums the ashes, leaving the house intact and the floor clean.
Real estate is saved.
That's right, Paula. Some of these houses are quite nice, and it would be a shame to ruin them for future vacationers.
General, can you give our viewers a sense of what it might be like to be the target of this weapon?
I can try. Say you're some hostile foreign person. You're sitting in your house, or tent, or yurt, or whatever. You're just sitting there, maybe reading whatever false holy book you foolishly believe in. Then there's a knock at the door. Hello? Who is it? The enemy would then hear something like a delivery, barbecue dog heads, or whatever foul food is the local favorite. The man opens the door, thinking he's going to have a nice meal, and then... Shroom! His guts are on the floor. His face is frozen in terror, and then... Whoosh, cremation.
Oh, that's impressive. My gosh, what we are able to do. I think we can all feel proud to be part of a culture that is able to devise something so miraculous. Bombs that knock on the door and disembowel the enemy. It's just incredible.
Little or no collateral damage.
An almost merciful bomb.
Like the god we worship.
To clarify, I don't want our viewers to misinterpret your remarks. You're saying that God is merciful, not that God is a merciful bomb.
Well, I think the Almighty can take any form he wants. Heck, he's got more stars in his lapel than any of us. Who are we to say that God isn't embodied in the perfection of an ARCO-3 scrotum scraper?
General, I just have to tell you, I am so impressed with military men and their can-do spirit. I find myself almost worshipful of your stern bearing and your heaving chest all glistening with medals. I can't even begin to tell you how insider I feel when you talk to me.
Thank you.
General, would you agree that there's a certain kind of playful incongruity for our viewers to see such a feminine female like Christy here give this reportage on things usually left for the boys?
You could be right, Larry, although these things are beyond my sphere of expertise.
I sort of soften it up, don't you think?
You most certainly do, ma'am. I feel so protective when I'm around women like you. I just melt. I just want to take your little hand in mine and keep the entire world at bay.
I love when you guys say ma'am. It just smacks of good breeding.
Well, my mother raised her boy right. Ma'am.
General Heston, can you, and I know details are sketchy, but can you venture a guess as to who it is we're at war with and what may have started the hostilities?
I'm just an old general. I'll leave the politics to the politicians. All I know is the president tells us we have a job to do and we do it.
After the scrotum scraper, then what?
Most likely they would employ the Excelsior 7 germ rocket.
Wow.
This weapon, also known as the Tooth Fairy, deployed from space, explodes 200 feet above the ground and spreads Altex chromium yellow on the enemy. As you know, Altex chromium yellow was used very effectively in the last war.
For our viewers who missed the last war and are just now tuning into the new war, can you describe what Altec's chromium yellow does?
It spreads gum disease.
Wouldn't want to be in the path of that.
Not if you value your teeth. No.
And prong three?
Oh, prong three would most likely be a pre-dawn lateral insertion. Just a guess.
That sounds painful.
Oh, it's meant to be.
Thank you, General Heston. We'll come back to you from time to time as events unfold.
My pleasure, Cynthia.
General Buck Heston, retired.
And there we have it. From Gip Hoppy's A New War, playing at the Wellfleet Harbor Actors Theater in Wellfleet, Massachusetts. Oh, my gosh. That was Caitlin Gibbon as a newswoman, Michael Dorval as General Heston, and Nathaniel McIntyre chiming in. Caitlin Gibbon, we have all heard these things. I don't know if you're a method actor, but do you have a role model for this, or is this just every cable television hostess up in one?
She's a smattering, because I have a different name every time I'm referred to. So she's a mix. I mean, there's a Diane Sawyer, there's a Katie Couric, there's everybody. Everybody, yeah. I just check out CNN.
It's not hard to find.
No, it's not hard to find.
Oh, God.
Just put on the wig.
It's fantastic. It's great. And Michael Dorval, the general, let's see, is this from the movies? Is this from The General's On Air? Where have you picked up this southern gentleman with the three powerful prongs?
Well, I guess it's a lot from, you know, growing up and watching the old war movies where generals always seem to keep their teeth connected.
Even when they started. Speak.
Yeah, it's always like this. Yeah, because their teeth is always showing, their jaw is always jutting out. And
you don't want
tough.
A missile slipping in there.
Yeah. No, and I think at some point, real generals started to emulate the fake generals. And that's what you end up seeing on TV when they get interviewed a lot.
Oh, my gosh. Gip Hoppy, the critics have been raving about this. I mean, my chest is heaving as I listen with laughter. I mean, you're right on it. That the audiences must just eat this up every night. We're so bathed in it. You've got a desperate need to laugh at it.
It really has been fun. The audiences have been going crazy for the show. And they tell me as they leave the theater that exactly what you just said, that it really feels good to laugh right now, especially in this time period we're in, and there's a real need to laugh at this stuff
Just
sort of tame it in our own minds, because if you didn't cry, you'd laugh.
You're going to go one way or the other. I mean, all that, the sycophantic host that's slavering over military technology, that sexuality of war, you've got a little Dr. Strangelove coming back in here with that.
Sure,
ooh.
Sure, absolutely.
We're going to have a break soon, but before we do, I want to hear, if we could, let's see, we've got a little country singing that goes on here. Set it up for us.
You know, I mean, there's been a lot of sort of jingoistic country patriotic songs, and so we thought we couldn't do this show without one, so Stephen Russell and I wrote this song. And I think it gets introduced in the play. I think we're ready.
Take it away.
Stand up. Stand up. Stand up and stomp around. Stand up, you sleeping giant. And turn the whole world upside down. My boy woke up last night again. He was crying. He was scared. He said, Daddy, why are they so mean in all them places over there? And what can we do to show them we're proud and we're defiant? I said, Bobby, lay your head back down. Let me tell you about this giant. There is a sleeping giant. And he's called the USA. He exports democracy and the good old American way. He's been asleep for nearly a week, but he's still mean and tough. And when that giant comes out to play, watch out, because he plays rough. You're gonna get a kick in the groin. You're gonna get a boot up the ass. When you get a taste of American lead, you'll wish you were on a fast. Here is calling, stand up, stand up, stand up and stomp around. Stand up, you sleeping giant, and turn the whole world upside down. God bless the sleeping giant. God bless the flag he flies. God bless this mighty land of ours.
I'm Tom Ashbrook with playwright Gip Hoppy and the cast of A New War. This is On Point. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're joined in the studio tonight by playwright Gip Hoppe, who's recently written and is now directing a new war at the Wellfleet Harbor Actors Theater in Wellfleet, Massachusetts. The entire cast is here with us, and we are laughing tonight. Gip Hoppe, what is it that this play is helping us get out of our system? You've built the sweat lodge here. What is it we're sweating out?
Well, frustration about the media coverage, frustration about the current administration, frustration about the direction that the nation is going in as a whole. There's a lot that goes on in this play, and there's a lot of things to work, that people can, laugh about that they've really not been laughing about lately.
Oh, no kidding. And you've got your finger right on it. I mean, the way that we just lovingly caress this war talk again and again, the country song we had there at the end, all the kind of the tones of patriotism.
You know, we're becoming more and more identified with our military hardware, and that makes me sad. As a patriotic American, I hate to see, us just become an empty shell, just a kind of, armored thing with nothing in the middle. And so that's pretty much where my anger comes from in this play.
And then we heard just before the break Stephen Russell as the country singer singing stand up and stomp around.
There's plenty of easy patriotism out there these days, as everybody knows. And, as the last refuge of scoundrels, I'm opting for another kind of patriotism, and that's what this play's about.
Well, you are creating a gale of laughter. We hope it blows away some of the false patriotism and makes way for the real stuff. Let's hear more. I want to laugh. My gosh, this is just what I need on a Friday night. Bikini Beach Catfight.
Oh, yeah. There's a lot of, media or Hollywood industry, getting behind the war effort. And in our play, we sort of have a segment where, you just heard the song by the country singer. And then now we have a little interview with a television personality.
Let's hear it from A New War.
Hollywood is getting behind the war effort, too. Several B-list celebrities have stepped up and voiced their support for America's new war. With us now is Lars Dahlgren, star of the hit TV series Bikini Beach Catfight. He's on the set at Malibu Beach where the show is filmed. Lars, thanks for being with us.
Yeah, hello.
Lars, I know you're on a break from shooting, so I won't keep you long, but I understand that you have an episode that deals directly with the war.
That's right, Gary.
Do you think the viewing public is ready for this?
I think so. The war is almost a half hour old, and I think people can step back enough and reflect on where we're at right now. Everyone here at Bikini Beach Catfight felt it was time to confront the issue head on.
Now, I understand that you rushed this episode into production as soon as the war started. Can you tell us what we might expect to see?
Yeah. Usually, the girls of Bikini Beach get in a big catfight, and I have to break it up. I play the lifeguard.
We know.
Yeah. But this week is big departure for us. The girls wear bikinis, but they are made of American flag. Yeah. You see, they have flag bikinis. And instead of fighting each other, they join forces together and fight a girl who isn't wearing American flag bikini.
So, am I correct in saying that the storyline reflects a coming together as a nation to oppose the forces of evil?
Exactly. In other words, we must beat on the girl who isn't wearing flag bikini.
Now, in this episode, do you break up this fight like usual?
No. No. You see, that's what makes it so special. I help them. I run in and help beat on the girl who isn't wearing American flag bikini. Then, right at the end, the camera shows that I am wearing American flag swim trunks.
We look forward to seeing it, Lars.
Yeah, it will be good. Bye now.
A program note, you can see the special wartime edition of Bikini Beach Catfight later tonight at 8 on our sister station, the Tits Ass Network. Check local listings as times may vary.
And there it is from A New War. Nathaniel McIntyre is the newsman. Michael Dorval, again, this time is Lars, the, the star, something
the star.
Schwarzenegger meets Dracula meets Bollywood. We have it all going on here. And, oh, I love your bikini.
If Schwarzenegger and David Hasselhoff had a baby, it would be Lars Dahlgren.
Well, he was pregnant in a movie once.
That's right.
Jeez, so here we've got news media makes commerce out of war. Slobbering over Burbank makes commerce out of war. Everybody's making commerce out of war.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of money to be made in, having a nice, juicy war going on, and everybody knows that. And it's also an easy way to ingratiate yourself in the general populace. You get behind the war.
Get the flags on the bikinis.
Yeah,
get them on the beach. Them out.
Yeah, it's like saying, I think mothers are great, So, I've been witnessing a lot of celebrities in the last year sort of step up and, talk patriotic talk, and it sort of it makes me ill.
Nathaniel, this time you're in the newsman role, and of course this is a sensitive one for me because I'm listening to all the intonations and thinking, oh my gosh, is that how, you know, do I ever slip? Do I ever go there? The kind of know-nothingness that is in the tone, even as it has this envelope of omniscience, strikes me.
Yeah, I mean, with the newsman, with this whole character, I've tried to give him sort of the innocence of a new newsman who's really just new into it and who really, I mean, he doesn't know all that much, but he is a little naive even, and he's just so excited about everything. And you kind of see a progression in him throughout the play too, but goes into that.
It's a progression that's horribly fascinating to observe. The Attorney General makes an appearance in the play, along with lots of important figures in American government. Yep. Tell us about it.
Well, we have, at one point in the play, as war breaks out, there's a lot of government officials. We have the Secretary of Defense, and we have the President of the United States, and then the Attorney General makes an announcement, too, just in terms of, security issues. And I guess we're going to hear that.
Stephen Russell from A New War.
We go now to Washington, where Attorney General Dan Harkin is about to make an announcement.
My fellow Americans, extraordinary times call for extraordinary measures. We are at war. This is a fact. Confronted with this wartime reality, we have security issues that stare us squarely in the face, and we need to take steps to deal with these issues. I am therefore announcing four steps that we will undertake immediately in the interests of national security. First, all public acts of breastfeeding are to be discontinued. Women who expose their breasts in public, for whatever reason, inclusive of, but not exclusive of, the feeding of a child will be arrested and prosecuted to the full extent of the law. Breasts are naughty, awful things, and exposing them only gives aid and comfort to the enemy. Secondly, I am, as of this moment, suspending all rights granted by the United States Constitution. Thirdly, we have set up a toll-free hotline for all Americans to call in and report anything suspicious that their neighbors might be doing. I'm often asked, what should we be looking for? Well, it could be something small. Say there's a house on your block that doesn't fly a flag. Or you have a neighbor who drives a fuel-efficient automobile. Any un-American activity that you feel needs to be reported, the sound of Middle Eastern music heard through an open window, anything, call this toll-free number, and the heroes of the Justice Department will investigate. And the fourth step I'm announcing today is that all retail clerks must now use the words under God as an addendum to thank you, have a nice day. All retail transactions shall now end with the words thank you, have a nice day, under God. If you have a retail transaction that does not include the words under God, call this toll-free number and we'll investigate. I know there are some who will seek to portray these actions as too draconian, but we are at war, and the sacrifice of a few rights is a small price to pay for the preservation of freedom. And if you are one of those who thinks this price is too high, then pause for a moment and consider the high price our brave weapons pay on the field of battle. Thank you, and have a nice day under God.
Stephen Russell playing the Attorney General in A New War. Stephen Russell, that voice is so great. You got in the country western, here you are. I don't know if you're selling Motel 6 or chewing tobacco or hard cider or Law and Order, but you've got it down. Branding breastfeeding, I guess John Ashcroft is the Attorney General who draped the bare breasts of justice in the lobby of the Department of Justice.
That's right.
And you've got those heroes of justice ready to swoop down on Middle Eastern music that might be floating out through an open window. You have a little too much fun with those lines.
I'm sorry. Well, it's great stuff to be able to do this, too. And I feel like this play has hit so many different nerves, and it's so resonant for me. I mean, I have a slightly different take on this because I don't – most of my information comes through radio, like BUR. Mm-hmm. So I hear voices a lot, and what I'm hearing is just so frightening to me, even without the pictures.
Even without the cable TV. Are you saying that even National Public Radio is giving you this send-up view of the world? Lay it on us.
Yeah, sure. Of course. I mean, not just because it's inescapable,
Mm-hmm.
It's
Because I think GIP has really tapped into this national mood right now, and you just can't avoid it.
We're truly swamped and bathed in it. Describe the audience reaction that you hear from the stage as you go through these lines. I mean, you must just get the waves of laughter coming up.
Well, the show gets longer every night because there are just some sections where you just hold and you hold and you hold, waiting for the laugh to die down, and it just keeps coming. I mean, for an actor, it's the ideal. I mean, you just love it, all that reaction coming back.
Talk about stand up and stomp around. That's what I want to do when I hear this. I want to hear more and more. Crosshairs. Gip, set it up for us.
Okay, well, this is, your basic, crossfire, type program.
And, back and forth. Here we go.
Yeah,
adversarial.
Yeah, pretty much. You know, two guys getting together and exchanging their supposedly opposite views.
Yes.
It explains itself.
All right, here we go.
Now for a special wartime edition of Crosshairs, our weekly, often controversial discussion of the issues. Let's join the combatants Drake LaFarbe and Joe O'Malley. You are in the crosshairs.
On the far right, I'm Joe O'Malley.
And on the middle right, I'm Drake LaFarbe. Joe, this war was inevitable, but will it go far enough? Does this administration have what it takes to finish the job?
Good question, Drake. Does the president have the cojones to finally take out the egghead element of our society and rid us once and for all of these cultural elites with their big words? I, for one, think he does.
It's certainly good politics to attack our colleges and clean out all these so-called intellectuals with their non-homey, non-folksy, bookish ways. But I disagree that this president has the stomach to finish the job.
I would expect that from you, a card-carrying moderate. But don't underestimate this president. He's never used a four-syllable word, and his down-home, just-plain-folks credentials are impeccable.
There you go again, Joe, the hypocrisy of the far right. You used the word underestimate, a five-syllable word if there ever was one.
Don't pull that old moderate trick on me. My small vocabulary is unassailable.
Vocabulary? Unassailable? Five syllables each. I rest my case.
Look, you. I just-plain-folks. You is egghead.
Me plain, too. Me plainer than you.
No, you not.
Yes, me am.
Me am more plain. Me is no egghead.
You is too egghead. You is just big brain man. Not just plain folks like rest of us. Make big talk. Make way big words. Got flippy smart boy tongue. Plain folk no big deal egghead when see them. No fool plain folk at home.
Me just folks. Me no brain.
Yeah, brain. Big bad brain. Big word brain man. Big scary brain tongue flapper man, you.
Maybe both just plain folk, small word men. Maybe both good.
Okay.
That's all for this week's edition of Crosshairs.
On the middle right, I'm Drake LaFarbe.
And on the far right, I'm Joe O'Malley.
Join us again next week for another edition of Crosshairs.
Oh, my God, I don't even know what to say. Yoda goes Wild West by the end there. Oh, it does get awfully simple sometimes.
Well, yeah, that scene came from, that was reminiscent of Al Gore being told when he was debating George Bush to dumb himself down. And I remember that just made me so angry, and I was like thinking, well, he didn't want to be a smarty pants.
Can't be a smarty pants.
God forbid the president should have a high intelligence.
But hard to trump Yaley George W. Bush on this front. I mean, he'll just take it down as low as you want to go when it gets to one syllable.
But, and I remember him saying, too, we need plain-spoken folk. And he would say that over and over again. We need some plain-spoken folk in Washington. So, that's sort of where we're at.
Well, and there's just great tension, because we do need plain-spoken folk, and then you can take it right down to a caveman exchange.
Yeah, we need thinkers too, though,
Mm-hmm. Yes, we do. I want to get more and more. You go right into the issue of media coverage of the war. Get Poppy, set up another segment for us.
Yeah, well, there's an intense amount of navel-gazing if you watch these shows. I mean, it's hard to turn on a cable, 24-hour cable news station and not hear them talking about their own coverage of the war. So they have a lot of kind of media watch segments where they talk about themselves.
We watch ourselves watching, watch ourselves
watch.
Yeah,
and so this is one of them.
Is the media coverage of the war a story in and of itself? Do we in the broadcasting industry overdo it? Joining me now for an in-depth look at ourselves, two of the nation's top experts in media. Joining me in the studio is Professor Drezhak Deminski, head of media studies at Boston University. Welcome, Professor.
Good to be here.
And joining us by satellite from San Francisco, media critic Darla Cotsworth. Hello, Darla.
Hello.
Professor, let's start with you. Is our coverage of the war too much, too little, just right?
Well, I think it's been fine. What's troubling to me at times is the lack of initiative at CNC in discussing its role.
So you would urge us to have more segments like this where we examine ourselves?
Yes, I would have more talks like the one we're having now to keep the self-examination in full public view.
Darley, want to jump in here?
Although I agree with Professor Dominski's basic premise that it's healthy for us to talk about the media's role in a free society, I would take it one step farther. For instance, I would like to see a segment where we talk about talking about it.
In other words, we should be talking about the discussions we have about ourselves.
Absolutely. We need to examine the self-examination of the critique.
Professor?
Well, I think Dahl's right, but we should also take a close look at the critique of the examination of the talking about the discussion we have about our inside look at the nature of what the media thinks about itself.
I agree. A close examination of the way we talk about the way the media talks about the way we look at the coverage of how the coverage of the war is handled would be a healthy thing.
Now, when I think about the discussions we have regarding our self-examinations or the way we talk about the conversations we have regarding our self-examination, I'm always tempted to ask, do we in the media talk about ourselves too much?
I think that's a whole new discussion.
Oh, Dahl's right, but a discussion about that kind of discussion would help immensely to get to the bottom of what form a discussion like that would take.
I'm afraid we're at the end of our discussion. Professor, Darla, thank you both for shedding so much light on an important discussion.
You're welcome.
Thank you for having us.
Bye.
Ah, parody that's cutting way too close to home. I came in and heard you rehearsing this, and I almost ran out screaming. We don't want to get to that. What is the difference, Gip Hoppy, between coverage, between conversation that informs, entertains, and lobotomizes?
Well, a lot of times I feel like I'm at a really crowded bar when I'm watching these shows, and there's a lot of discussion and a lot of drunken discussion in which nothing ever gets resolved. And that's the feeling you get from watching a lot of 24-hour news. They just keep talking and talking and talking, but nothing ever really gets figured out. There's no consensus formed, really. And so that's sort of, you know, that's the madness of it.
But the microphone is turned over to the moment, and the moment is just bathed with the stream of
There's an enormous amount of pressure for them to fill a lot of time. And so, you know, they have huge, huge gaps between actual news to fill. And so that's where a lot of the comedy in the show comes from.
I'm going to have to look very closely and see if there's a tear of sympathy for those poor hosts in here.
Oh, there is.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. We're talking with playwright Gip Hoppy and the cast of A New War. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. I'm joined in the studio tonight by playwright Gip Hoppy, who has just brought out A New War at the Wellfleet Harbor Actors Theater in Wellfleet, Massachusetts, and the cast of that show is here. We are laughing in our boots tonight and having a good time. I hope you're enjoying it as well. I want to hear more. Gip, Baxter from Ohio, bring him on. Who is he? Let us hear the interview. What's it about?
Baxter's just an interview they do on the show, and he's a very patriotic man, and, you know, it explains itself.
So here it is, CNC, the cable
news
network.
The cable news channels from Atlanta.
That loves the war with Baxter from Ohio in A New War.
And now in a lighter vein, Americans have all kinds of ways of showing support for the war.
But we found a man in Ohio who really went all out.
Baxter Dumphy from Midland, Ohio, actually had an American flag sewn directly onto his forehead. He joins us now. Baxter, welcome.
Hi.
Baxter, that looks painful.
It is. It hurts. It hurts a lot. Oh, God, it hurts something awful.
Baxter, where did you get the idea to have a flag sewn directly onto your forehead?
I don't know. I just did it. I wish I hadn't now.
Did you do the sewing yourself?
No, my wife did it. She sews.
Did you use any kind of anesthetic?
Yeah, I drank quite a bit of beer, and I did a couple of shots.
But it still hurt.
Yeah, it hurt. It hurt awful. Oh, God, I screamed the whole time. It still hurts! Christ almighty, it hurts!
Baxter, how many stitches did it take?
We didn't count!
And you have no idea why you did it.
Support the war? Show how much I love my country, I guess? I don't know. It's kind of hard to think now. It hurts so much. At least the bleeding stopped. Oh, God. I feel faint. I gotta go lay down now.
Okay, Baxter, we'll let you go. And, Baxter, good luck. Baxter Dunphy of Midland, Ohio, with a very unusual form of patriotism.
There we go, patriotism to the max. Well, here it begins to get a little closer, Gipapi. The whole play has an enormous amount of fun with the cable hosts and the actors and the country singers. But we're the audience for this. I mean, we're the country that watches and that watches the commercials between the nonstop news. The whole ball of fire of war coverage says something about us, too. It's not just the cable news business.
Absolutely, and that's a big part of the show, too. Part of the play is the national mood right now and how we accept what's told us, how we, unquestioningly agree to support something that, you know, might be pretty horrific. The play is set in the future, I might add.
And I didn't notice.
Yeah, and I did that on purpose because, and it's at a time when there's people don't go and fight anymore. All the fighting's done by robot weaponry, which we heard earlier.
Oh.
And so it's become, quite easy for America to go to war. I mean, and there's very little effect on anybody's lives. There's no real sacrifice that anybody has to make. And as a matter of fact, the president, when he makes a speech about a war, asks people to just go shopping. I mean, that's like the war. The war effort is.
You
just
said this was set in the future.
Yeah.
I'm confused
again. Yeah. So, but you know, so
this isn't World War II anymore. This isn't even the Vietnam War where the body bags came home.
It envisions a future in which I think is pretty close, in which with smart weaponry, it will be very, very easy for us to wage war, and we won't really have to sacrifice all that much. And the easier it becomes to do, the more we'll do it.
Well, you've had fun. You've done it deliciously. I won't say viciously. But yet we are all stuck in this life, in this world, in this moment at the same time. I mean, there are threats. The towers did come down.
Right.
Where do your politics sit, Gip? Is there anything that you would go to war for anymore?
Oh, absolutely. And I don't think we honor anybody. I mean, that was involved in the September 11 tragedy by killing more people. That's what I believe. And I don't think, and this is play is specifically about our intended preemptive actions around the world. And, I don't think we right now somewhere in Iraq is an innocent person who's going to die in our war. Mm-hmm. And I don't see the difference between them and even, people who might have been hurt in September 11. I feel we don't honor those dead by creating more dead. That's my feeling.
And as a satirist, have you ever had richer pickings?
No.
Jackie O and trashy novels and corporate America, they look like a low grass compared to this.
Yeah, these are the good old days.
I guess it never gets richer than when everything gets whipped up into a frenzy, and maybe a war frenzy is the richest of all.
Yeah, and I think right now is a very unique time in our country's history. I think, this idea that we are about to without provocation or, this idea of preemptive striking is a big shift. It's a huge change in what this country has always sort of, adhered to. The rules of engagement are changing right in front of our eyes. And so it's a good time to talk about these things.
And it's official. It is our new national policy.
It is.
Wow. Gipapi, you've had an enormous amount of fun with it. It makes us think. And just listening and laughing here in the studio, it reminds me how much I feel the need to stand up and stomp around and really have a hoot about this. It may be the only way to respond right now.
Well, we got a song for you.
Okay. We want to hear some more of that. First, I want to thank you, Gipapi. Gipapi is playwright and author of A New War. Thanks also to cast members Caitlin Gibbon, Nathaniel McIntyre, Michael Dorval, and Stephen Russell. Listeners, if you're in the Boston area, A New War will be playing at the Wellfleet Harbor Actors Theater until November 9th. For more information, visit our website at onpointradio.org. This is On Point. Stephen Russell, take us out with some more of that sleeping giant, Billy Bob Braggart.
God bless the sleeping giant. God bless the flag he flies.
God bless this mighty land of ours where the sleeping giant lies. Stand up, stand up, stand up and stomp around. Stand up, you sleeping giant. Turn the whole world upside down. Don't matter if you're Iran or Iraq. Don't matter if you're Afghan or Croat. He's coming with his mighty missile to ram it down your throat. Hear his call and stand up. Stand up, stand up and stomp around. Stand up, you sleeping giant. And turn the whole world upside down. Turn the whole world upside down.
In a moment, I'll be joined by On Point News analyst Jack Beatty. First, let's listen back to the sounds of this past week.
All those in favor of nominating Walter F. Mondale and approving him as the next, well, the next United States Senator from the great state of Minnesota, say aye. Opposed? We have a nominee, Fritz Mondale.
I know Minnesota. I was born here. I grew up here. I was married here. We raised our kids here. I graduated from the university here. And I served our state for those wonderful years. And I know every bit of the state of Minnesota.
We have an obligation to democracy itself. So I'm here to, in South Bend, urge Republicans and Democrats and independents, people don't care about political parties, to do your duty and to go to the polls.
The main question, said Ben Eliezer, is why did we wait until today? Because we preferred the unity government at this time of grave security questions. We did it for the nation, he said. But every day in Israel, we saw more and more problems.
I want to address the relatives and loved ones of those who died, said Putin. We were not able to save everyone. Forgive us.
I consider the matters charged in the federal indictment today atrocities. They're tragedies. They are very serious. It's important that we have available the very most serious penalties in a setting like this.
We saw this huge boat with all of these people just getting out and running and throwing themselves in the water. And there were just hundreds of people just rushing and rushing and running towards the bridge. And they were swimming ashore as fast as they could.
I find it ironic that an organization whose hallmark is full and fair disclosure has a chairman who is playing hide the ball with information.
And that's a week. Minnesota Democrats choose former Vice President Walter Mondale to replace the late Paul Wellstone on the Senate ballot. President Bush crisscrosses the country campaigning for Republican candidates. Benjamin Ben-Eliezer, Israel's Labor Party Minister of Defense, resigns, shattering Ariel Sharon's coalition government in Israel. Vladimir Putin defends the use of toxic gas in ending the hostage crisis at a Moscow theater, but apologizes to the families of those who died. John Ashcroft announces federal charges against alleged sniper John Allen Muhammad. A boat full of over 200 Haitians washes ashore almost right onto a major highway in Key Biscayne, Florida. And SEC Chairman Harvey Pitt is under fire again, this time for his selection of William Webster to lead a new accounting oversight board. Pitt failed to tell his fellow SEC commissioners that Webster headed the audit committee at U.S. Technologies, which is being sued by investors for fraud. And there it is, Jack, as we come up on an election day, just a few days away now, a lot in play.
Yes, the election is sort of a themeless pudding. There's no national theme. It's sort of a Tip O'Neill election. All politics is local, and about 80% of races, of course, we already know the winners. Some people are saying that the Democrats will not take the House and that they will hold on to the Senate. We'll just have to see. To me, the most interesting thing is this is really the year of the woman governor. And four out of Our last five presidents have been governors, and 10 women are running this year for governor.
So maybe this is the new crop. Maybe this is the wave that goes to the White House one day.
Maybe out there someday after we see that Pooh wins on November next Tuesday, we're going to see a future president.
Well, the White House is also clearly waiting to see whether they end up with a clean sweep in Washington or something less than that, with the House and Senate both up for grabs. And the U.N. also holds its breath and waits because, of course, as soon as the election is by, the pedal goes to the metal on getting a resolution through or the resolution blowing up in the Security Council and the U.S. deciding to go it alone with Iraq.
It sounds as if we are going to get support there and that the French have compromised, we have compromised, and it looks like they've got that worked out. There's going to be masterly ambiguity in the resolution, and I think that's what everybody wants.
The SEC just doesn't get out of the limelight, and Harvey Pitt seems to endlessly have his hands full of problems there. And again this week, complaints that the former FBI head William Webster is not the right man to vigorously, rigorously go after the accounting industry.
It is just so puzzling. I mean, that this man just goes from problem to problem and brings them on himself. And in a job where, you know, he's got to be a sort of tiger of rectitude. That's the whole nature of the job, especially now with all these corporate accounting scandals. I think the president will replace him. You know, it's one of the admirable things about Bush. He doesn't fire people, but here's one who's become a real liability.
Also a place where we see, even in the aftermath of 9/11, with everything going on in the world, the lobbying never stops in Washington. It's a matter of record that the accounting industry did not want Thomas Biggs, a tougher critic, in that seat. We had former Senator Gary Hart on this week saying that American industries are lobbying behind the scenes not to be pushed to spend money on guarding pipelines, oil refineries, power plants, chemical plants. They don't want to put out the money.
Oh, gosh. Gee. Well, you know, I think the president, you know, presidents govern through the interest groups who elected them. That's the way it works. But the president's bigger now than the groups that elected him. He has this national standing, international standing. And I think he's got to turn to some of these groups and said, look, you've been generous to Republicans, and that's fine. But, you know, we've got to really make the country safe. And or in the case of the SEC, we really got to have a tiger in this job. He's now got the standing to do that, and Clinton did that to his liberals. He said, look, folks, you've got to understand you can't get everything you want.
Maybe time for that, maybe right after the election. Yeah. I thought that the story of the Haitians coming ashore in Florida, it was one of these reminders that however high the walls may be, we are in an increasingly crowded world, and the seashores can wash up our fellow man and woman any day of any week of any year.
Oh, yeah. And the desperation of those fellow men and women from another world, really.
Mopped up and sent home. Jack, have a great weekend. Thanks for being
you
with
too.
Us.
Okay.
On Point is produced by Meghna Chakrabarty, Eileen Amata, Kelly Jones, John Roberts, James Roths, Keith Shields, Karen Schiffman, and Tim Skog, with help from Oliver Reed and Michael Garth. Our senior producer is Graham Griffith. On Point is a production of WBUR Boston and WRNI Providence. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
Cassettes and CDs of On Point are available for $15. Go to onpointradio.org or call 1-800-909-9287. This is